Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Dr. Scott Jensen podcast. This is episode 3. We're back, and we're just going to jump right into it. This last week in Minnesota, we saw a shooting. We had a police officer who shot and killed Daunte Wright. She apparently mistakes her gun for a taser and accidentally shot him. I guess that's the story right now. It's absolutely horrible. Nobody wants to see this stuff happen. I mean, this is just bad. But do you have a response that you want to give to this right out the gate? Because I know this is just on everybody's mind right now, and it's a big thing that's happening. It's just a horrible thing.
Well, thank you. And thank you, Andy, for doing this once again with me. In regards to Daunte Wright's death, I think it's important to not be in a hurry to armchair quarterback the situation. I think we saw elected leaders shoot from the hip and use inflammatory words. I think Michigan Representative Rashida Tlaib reflected the worst within us when she comes out and says that this is nothing but government-funded murder. My heart aches at the sadness that Daunte's mom and dad must feel, his family, his friends, his neighbors. But without ever having met the police officer, I'm going to guess that her heart aches as well for Daunte and his family. It's easy to jump in without all the facts. And it was interesting to me, Andy, to watch how the facts unfolded. First, we learned that there was another shooting. Then we learned that a black man had died at the hands of a police officer's gun. Then we learned that the police officer was a female. Then I think I learned that video revealed strong evidence that she was reaching for her taser and grabbed her gun and was horrified at her own actions within moments. Then we learned that she was a veteran police officer who was highly regarded by her peers and the community. And finally, I learned, reading one report, that she was working with someone who was inexperienced and was being trained. And each one of these facts that I learned gave me context to look at the situation. We have a system in place that will, if you will, adjudicate and provide justice. And justice must be had. But I think as a former elected leader and as a candidate for the governor's office in 2022, my responsibility is to remain balanced and measured in my responses. I'm terribly saddened by this. We need to step back and have an independent and immediate investigation. We need to look at how can we make things safer. We need to look at all kinds of different levels of this situation. But for now, my focus is literally to pray for the family of Daunte and the police officer involved, and to, if you will, try to understand, are there any such parallels in my own life? I mean, I do surgery, Andy, and there are times where in a moment something happens that I hadn't expected. Perhaps it's an arterial pulsing bleeder during surgery. And in a reflex of action, I reach for an instrument that later on I realize might have actually not been the best instrument I should have reached for. Rather than try to pulverize the bleeding artery with a cautery unit, I might have been better off reaching for a clamp and then being able to take a moment to determine what will be the best long-term answer for this bleeding artery. Instantaneous decisions are hard. And when we're not in the moment and we get a chance to review something three times and look at it in slow motion, armchair quarterbacking seems pretty easy. I don't think that's fair to anybody. And I appreciated the heartfelt comments from Dante's mom. She's in an incredibly painful place right now, and yet she's still speaking from the heart. And she wants justice, but she doesn't want more bloodshed. That's about all I've got to say, Andy.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's important, yeah, like you said, to pray for everybody involved in the situation, for Dante's family and the police officer's family and everybody. I want to ask, I mean, as these situations seem to be happening like every other week, you know, what should be our response to this? Like, as people, like in general, not even Republican, Democrat, doesn't matter. When somebody dies, I mean, it's a horrible thing. And what should be our response? Because you see some people are angry and they go and they protest, which turns to rioting. And you see some people get angry at the rioters and the protesters, and it just becomes this hate-filled, you know, it becomes like something even more disgusting. And so what should our response to be? I know you just kind of said, you know, try to look at all the facts, but if you're governor right now in this situation, I mean, what would you tell the people of Minnesota? How do we react to this and try to build unity from something this horrible?
Building unity should not be bantered about like some political slogan. Building unity is going to take time, and bridge building has to take place. Otherwise, it's just empty words. It's almost easier to say what shouldn't happen versus what should happen. What shouldn't happen is political pandering in terms of messaging. What shouldn't happen is having this swept under the rug. What shouldn't happen is the wanton destruction of someone else's property that you don't have the right to do. What shouldn't happen is a normalization of violence as a reaction to this. What should happen? We should all engage, be relevant, and demand change. I think one of the things that we have to look at is in the process of selecting our police officers and training our police officers and monitoring in an ongoing fashion the performance of our police officers, what do? In the initial application process and interviewing process, what are we looking for? Who are we looking for? What characteristics do we elevate? Which characteristics would cause us to be hesitant to bring such a person onto the police force? That's what I would do when I'm looking at my own staff. In terms of training, are we training with always a heightened sense of react and respond and be ready for violence? Or are we training with an emphasis towards de-escalation and facilitating understanding? Are we too ready to engage in a high-speed chase, chasing a car down the wrong way on a freeway? Are we too ready to allow a situation to escalate where we think that it has to be resolved right now, when the fact of the matter is there may be alternative ways to resolve issues of law breaking, whether it's as simple as an expired license tab or failing to stop at a stop sign? I think that when we look at who we're looking for and what traits we elevate and how we're training and how we're monitoring, and I think we also have an obligation, whenever a situation like this occurs, we have got to maximize the learning from it. We have to squeeze all the lessons out of this so it doesn't happen again. In terms of where a gun is positioned or where a taser is positioned or what they feel like to the hand or whatever, we have got to examine these situations. If a surgeon leaves an instrument or gauze in a belly wound and closes it up, and later on the patient suffers from this, as likely they would, everything has to be retraced. Did we count the sponges? Did we count the instruments? What are we going to do next time to make sure this doesn't happen? We have had calamitous things occur where people have had the wrong leg removed in the world of medicine. How do we stop that from happening again? It shouldn't happen in the first place. But my stars, if it happens once, we've got to have surgical units across the land put measures into place that don't allow it to happen again. These are the things I think we have to do.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's just a terrible situation. I think, yeah, we just need to be praying for these people, and hopefully some good will come out of this at the end of the day. I want to shift over to a different topic that we want to talk about, the vaccine passports. This is an interesting thing. I don't have the vaccine. I don't think I need the vaccine. My immune system is strong. I'm young. You know, I got a really good immune system. So what's the deal with these, though? Like what exactly are they wanting to do? Are they, like, with these vaccine passports, we're not going to be able to travel around the United States or what? Like, do you want to like break that down for everybody?
Thank you, Andy, for asking such a pertinent, relevant question for the day. Let's go back a year before we start answering today's question about vaccine passports. Let's talk about immunity passports from a year ago. A top-ranked scientific journal called Nature had an article about a year ago talking about the wrongness of an immunity passport. You might be wondering, what is the difference between an immunity passport and a vaccine passport? Well, an immunity passport was discussed a year ago in regards to those people who had COVID and recovered from the disease. Should those folks be entitled to special privileges because they no longer would be part of the problem in terms of contracting the disease and spreading it on and transmitting it because they're immune? They've got antibodies. They've got cellular immunity. Nature pointed out multiple reasons why an immunity passport would be wrong. The ACLU, typically a left-leaning organization, did the same. Across the land, the concept of an immunity passport was criticized because it's a true invasion of our rights. It has the potential to create unintended consequences that would make things worse. It disadvantages the people who most need support. If we look at rate of vaccines, many times minority communities have a lower rate of vaccination. We need to understand why. But if we're going to start producing passports, whether you're talking an immunity passport because you recovered from the disease or a vaccine passport because you got vaccinated, we are now discriminating against those very people who have been discriminated against too much already. So let's fast forward a year. Now we're talking about vaccine passports. And in the context of that conversation, I find it both alarming and intriguing that the folks who are immune to the disease are not being included as the privileged that you would get if you're vaccinated. So we've gone from an immunity passport discussion a year ago to a vaccine passport discussion today. And the immunity folks from last year, which would also include me because I have antibodies and I've been donating my plasma and I've had my antibody presence confirmed multiple times. Now, this isn't about me. This is about doing the right thing. Our health is private. If I have a disease or a malady and I'm treating it or not treating it, that's no business of yours and it's not the business of government. We've had many elected leaders try to deflect on this question of a vaccine passport by saying, I'm not interested in it, or this or that. But turning around and in the next breath, allowing private corporations to institute their own form of a vaccine passport requirement. So we can say we don't have a vaccine passport law, but if we're allowing a sports team to deny access to someone that doesn't have a vaccine passport, if we're allowing an airline to not allow someone to get on a plane and fly to New York City or to Austin, Texas, without a vaccine passport, if we're allowing private and public entities to unilaterally go ahead and do this without prohibiting it, then what we are doing is we're consenting to a de facto vaccine passport mandate. And that's just as wrong. You could even say it's worse because it's sneaky. It's the kind of BS that politicians do all the time. A vaccine passport is immoral on a multitude of levels. We haven't even discussed yet the fact that not one of these vaccines has been approved. Each one of them is being used under an emergency use authorization. We have seen AstraZeneca stop, start over in Europe. We have seen the J&J paused in America. Yeah. We have seen the two, Moderna and Pfizer, a brand new technology never before utilized in a vaccine. We know it definitely causes these, both of these vaccines cause side effects. It's difficult to ascertain with absolute certainty that a sequence of causation led from the vaccine to the death. But is there evidence that this happened in a small percentage, a very small percentage of people? Yes, there is. On all these levels, the notion of mandating or a de facto mandate for vaccine passports is just immoral.
So what do you do then? I mean, if again, if you're the governor of Minnesota, and I don't know how much control you can have over this as the governor, I don't know how that works, but what would you be pushing for right now if people are pushing for this vaccine? Because, you know, I feel like the left's argument would be that you talked about how, you know, what's happening in me is not any of your business. It's not the government's business, not your business. I think the left would argue that, like, if what's in me, if I have a disease that could kill you, then it is your business. And I think that would be their argument. Now, I don't really agree with that totally. But what would be your response to that then?
Well, then we have to go back to the drawing board and redefine what the Constitution says and what health freedom means. Because if you're going to use that logic that you have to be vaccinated because otherwise you might harbor a disease that could kill me, then we'd have to do that with influenza, pneumonia, and a variety of other potential infections because you could harm me. Mm-hmm. We would have to, across the board, strip you of your liberties to choose. That's what we'd be talking about. The fact of the matter is, if you don't get vaccinated, and I think you're putting me at risk because of your decision, isn't that a fallacy? If I get the vaccine, if the vaccine does what it's supposed to do, aren't I protected? So if I'm protected, how is your choice adversely impacting on my health? Now, I understand there are people out there that might not be, who might not be eligible for the vaccine. Perhaps they have an immune malady that would make it a bad idea. Regardless, that's a very small percentage of the population. And you cannot call America a free country if you are going to take a tiny, minuscule group of people and say, for that reason, we are not going to demand that they protect themselves. We are going to demand that everybody else sacrifice their rights to choose. I've said this before, Andy, and I'm going to say it again. Getting a vaccine is not like getting a shot of penicillin for strep throat. Getting a vaccine is a medical intervention designed to elicit a specific response on the part of the immune system, hoping for protection against a disease and nothing more, hoping for no untoward consequences to occur. But with virtually every vaccine, there are unexpected, unanticipated, untoward consequences that do occur. So when we decide to say to someone, you don't get to choose, your neighbor might get to choose, your government might get to choose, your governor might get to choose, that's wrong. So what would I do if I were governor? I would work with the Senate and the House, and I'd pass a bill that says there will be no mandate. There will be no de facto mandate. We will not have private industries unduly infringe on someone's rights by creating circumstances that appear to be very much a de facto mandate. That's what needs to be done.
Yeah, I mean, that's great. That's just a complete, I don't even know. The idea of a vaccine passport to me is absolutely crazy. But we need to pivot into talking about TikTok. Was it a couple of weeks ago? There was a 60 Minutes show that basically was a hit piece on Ron DeSantis from Florida. You had a response to that. Do you want to give us, what was your response? You gave a response on TikTok. What was that? What did you have to say to 60 Minutes?
basically what I said was that that kind of journalism, when 60 Minutes does a hit job, they are basically engaging in sensationalistic reporting that has nothing to do with facts. I was no more critical of the 60 Minutes episode than CNN was, or other Democrats in the state of Florida who came to Governor DeSantis's defense and said that knowingly 60 Minutes went ahead and published their piece having sliced and spliced and diced a news conference such that the information contained in the news conference was not transmitted. It was absolutely corrupted and adulterated. And millions of Americans were crying out against what 60 Minutes had done. And that day, I was informed that I was permanently banned from TikTok and the 286,000 followers I had would not be able to follow me. The more than 100,000 viewers of my videos per day would not have my videos to view, and that the 1.2 million people who had attested that they liked our page would not have the chance to like anything further. I went on the TikTok page, and honest to goodness, they have put together enough challenging reading material to try to figure out what you've done wrong. They don't tell you what you did wrong. They don't tell you which video qualified you for permanent banning. We had never been given a warning. We had had some TikToks blacked out, some videos blacked out on TikTok because of, quote, community violation, end quote. But we had appealed several of those, and they'd put them back up. So we thought it was a process of engaging with TikTok leaders, learning, trying to understand what they did not want to see and what they did want to see. And I had no interest in inflaming anybody's spirit such that they would have to permanently ban me. But this is what happened. Now, we were told later by TikTok that it was because I had some videos on my page that spread misinformation regarding COVID. Well, I hadn't put anything out on COVID, I don't think, for at least a day or two. So I have no clue which video they're referring to. I have no clue what the misinformation was. I mean, are they saying that they disagree with my perspective on how death certificates are completed in the situation with COVID-19? Are they saying that I said something that was incorrect in regards to the validity of a PCR swab test for someone who's told that they've got COVID when the fact of the matter is they're fully vaccinated 4 weeks earlier? I don't know what the misinformation was, but I know if all you throw out is something very ambiguous and then you tell the world that, by the way, you don't have to defend what you threw out, that's a pretty darn convenient situation to be in. I'd like to just remind Andy, our audience, of what Dwight Eisenhower said when he gave his farewell speech in 1961 after serving two terms as president. He warned America about the potential for public policies to become captive to a scientific, technological elite who would make decisions without regard to the principles of the Constitution or the goals of a free society. Well, what does that mean, a scientific, technological elite? Is TikTok a technological elite who gets to make decisions about who gets canceled and who doesn't? Without concerns regarding the U.S. Constitution, freedom of speech, or the goals of a free society? Who owns TikTok? Whoever owns TikTok, do they buy into the U.S. Constitution? Do they buy into the goals of a free society of America? I think that that President Eisenhower was incredibly prescient when he said these words more than half a century ago. Honest to goodness, a scientific, technological elite. Would Dr. Fauci, having been in charge of the NIAID for 36 years and commanding a budget of nearly $6 billion, would he be part of a scientific elite who might be able to choose what gets funded, who gets funded, things like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is, okay, so this is a question that I have. When I was thinking through this whole thing, and maybe it would be good to try to get somebody from TikTok to come on this podcast and have a conversation about this, because I think this needs to be had. What exactly, like, who's to blame for this at the end of the day? Because sometimes when let me back up real quick, because I think people need to actually understand why this is so important. And some of the people that listen to this podcast are older and they might not be on TikTok. The reason why this is so important is because TikTok is probably the biggest platform right now, like the most popular platform right now, social media platform right now. And Scott had almost 300,000 followers on it. And a lot of the audience on TikTok they're young. They're Gen Z and they're millennials. They're the people that the Republicans usually fail to get to talk to and to reach. And so when me and Scott first talked, I was like, you got to get on TikTok. So he gets on TikTok and he blows up. And now that they're taking him off of TikTok, he's essentially just losing that audience of young people, that it's going to be very hard to get those people back. So this is why this is such a big deal for some of the older listeners out there who are probably like, I don't care about TikTok. No, it's important, because TikTok is where all the young people are, and you need young people to win elections. I mean, when the boomers die out, we don't want the Republican Party to die out. So that's why this is important. But here's my question. Whose fault is this at the end of the day? Because Republicans are blaming, the Democrats and the left and the big tech, and it's like they can't censor our speech. But I'm thinking about this, and I'm like, okay, the owners of TikTok can do whatever they want. Facebook, they can do whatever they want. Instagram, Twitter, they can do whatever they want. Should we be actually more angry at ourselves that we didn't get more involved in tech back when it, 10, 15, 20 years ago, back when I don't know what Republicans were focusing on, but now we have no platforms. And so, that brings on a whole other set of issues for Republicans. Who should we really be angry at? Should we be angry at ourselves, or should we be angry at the Democrats? That's my question.
There's a lot there that you just spoke to. Let me unpack a little bit of it. And if I don't get it all, please feel free to circle back, Andy.
Yeah.
First comment I would have is, this is not about Democrats and Republicans and independents. This is about us. This is about Americans. I would say, if it can happen to me, are you so certain that it could not happen to you? I would ask, if we did not anticipate 10 and 20 years ago what these platforms could do, is that a rationale for doing nothing? Or should we instead say, wherever you are, be there. We have to step into this and collectively solve the problem. Do we have a technological elite allowed to control the thoughts and the thought processes of America? Wouldn't this technological elite be as compelling a danger and risk to us as Russia or China or any other nation that has an interest in interfering with our election process? Don't we undermine the confidence of our elections to a point where the peaceful succession of leadership could be endangered? Big, heady questions that have to be asked. But let me step back to something you said early on in your question. You referenced, why does it matter that Scott Jensen got permanently banned from TikTok? Well, you could go back 50 years or 25 years or last year and ask yourself, how does someone with a message communicate with all the decision makers? And who are the decision makers we're talking about? We're talking about voters, anybody 18 years and over. Some folks read newspapers, and when they're done, they got to wash their hands because of the ink. Some people read it online. If online services all of a sudden are terminated, that group of people won't get that news. But the inky-fingered people will still be getting it. Some people don't do either of those, but go to a tremendous number of community events. Some people listen to the radio. Some people watch the 6 o'clock news every night. All of these people need to be engaged in the process of explaining positions and perspectives of folks who are running for office. That's why I went on TikTok. I want to have a conversation with a group of people who I think are critically important for the future of our nation. That's that group of people who are between 18 and 40, millennials, and far more than millennials. I wanted to have a conversation with people who said, I don't want 10-minute messages. I want 1 minute or less. I want it bite-sized. I want it succinct. And I want it power-packed. And that's what I tried to do. And in 3 weeks, I had almost 300,000 followers. I wanted to have a conversation with those folks, and I've been denied that. Am I willing to swallow my pride, Andy, and apologize to TikTok and my audience? Absolutely. Just tell me what you want me to apologize for. Let me critically look at what you're saying I did wrong. If I spread misinformation, please share it with me so that I can correct it and say, folks, I said this was fact when I should have said it was my opinion. I will apologize. Not because I want to grovel my way back into TikTok, but because that's the right thing to do. But if all you do is tell someone, you're spreading misinformation, and don't give me the specifics, then what misinformation is it? Is it that I told you the Twins lost 4-2 last night? Or is it that I told you that the weather's going to be sunny tomorrow? Folks, this is such a harrowing, dangerous place for us to be that you've got to let go of the label that you might live by politically. I don't care if you're a Democrat, independent, Republican, libertarian, or whoever. This is a huge deal. And when you see people getting sliced and diced out of these programs, there was a doctor whose interview before a legislative body on a COVID topic was sliced out of YouTube. This was a question and answering that went on in a legislative process. And that was removed. Is this where we need to be? If because we didn't recognize the potential dangers 10 or 20 years ago, is that reason for us to do nothing now? We have got to somehow bring a measure of free speech into the world of big tech.
Yeah, I agree. We have to do something about it. I guess the question is, what is there to do about it? Because I know we have Republican, or I mean, more right-wing conservative people trying to create their own social media platforms. So you have like Gab and Parler, and then I hear Trump is trying to create his own. But the problem there is that when there's a right-wing conservative social media platform or social network platform, the only people that are going to be on it are right-wing people. There's not going to be the left on there. There's not going to be much conversation. It's all everybody going to be agreeing on everything. And so this is why Twitter and all these platforms are, and Facebook is huge for you and for all politicians, is that because everybody's on them, regardless of political party, that's where the conversations are being had. And so how do we, you know, then, right, I mean, we can go back in time and we can complain about the past, and I like to do that sometimes, but that's not going to be great. What can we do now to keep the conversation going while maybe, you know, people might be getting kicked off of social media? I mean, that might be the reality. How can we combat that? You know, what are we going to do? I mean, what is the Scott Jensen campaign going to do? What are you going to do?
That's a really interesting nuance to this question, Andy. Hats off to you for sort of uncovering that. You're right. The notion that if you don't like it, go do your own thing. What you're going to do is you're going to have a very truncated conversation. You're not going to have the kind of dialogue America is accustomed to. You're literally going to divide America then into platforms, almost like we sometimes see with, if you will, cable news networks. We have people that watch this or that and nothing else. That's what would happen here. If one group comes out and says, well, we're going to create our own, and TikTok says, well, We've already knocked Jensen off. We're going to knock a bunch more off, and it's going to be this way. We run into a terrible, terrible situation where the ability for us to communicate back and forth, liberals and conservatives, is absolutely sabotaged.
Yeah. So, I mean, right. Then what do you think we do?
Well, I mean, I think what you're talking about here is it's hard stuff, and Republicans may not like what I have to say.
Yeah.
Because you're talking about, are we dealing with a monopoly? And I've oftentimes used the reference, if you look at a utility company, why do we consider it a monopoly, and why do we have a thing called a PUC, a Public Utility Commission? We have it because basically for life itself, we need to have electricity in our homes, or we may freeze to death, or we may be unable to retain the foodstuffs that we have in our home. There's all kinds of reasons why we all need electricity. But an electrical company could double their charges tomorrow because there are no alternatives. No one can be asked to go out and build their own electrical company. Nobody can go out and, in a week or a day or a month, try to find some way to create a hydroelectric source of power. So we have a Public Utility Commission to provide thoughtful, cautious, measured regulation to the electrical companies. Is big tech any less a monopoly than Xcel? If we're pushed over and over again by our sources for everyday life, banks, grocery stores, yada, 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 pushed to pay online, to get rid of paper. In fact, we have to pay more if we stay with paper. If we're doing that over and over again, do people really have a choice? Don't we have a de facto mandate that you will move on to the world of online, or you won't be able to do this, this, or this? So I think you can make the case quite easily that big tech is a monopoly. And as a monopoly, they need to be called on the carpet. Legislatures in the states and at the federal level need to look at how do we weigh in, step in, and make certain that one person, a CEO of a big tech company, doesn't have an excessive amount of control over the thoughts of Americans. George Orwell spoke about this in 1984. And I don't want to pick on Mr. Zuckerberg, but quite frankly, doesn't he run a monopoly? And doesn't he control my ability to communicate with the voters in Minnesota?
Yeah. Yes, I think he does. And I think I want to ask one more question on in the big tech conversation is, how do you think this is going to affect, you know, U.S. elections and Minnesota elections? I'm thinking through this and I'm like, okay, this could be really bad for you. It could be bad for anybody who gets canceled off of TikTok or Facebook or Twitter, because for example, you say you're going to run for governor a month or two ago, and you're on all these platforms, you're growing fast on all these platforms, and they all come out and they say, you know, we don't like, they say, Scott Jensen is spreading misinformation, you're permanently banned. That can affect the election. If you don't have a voice to the people aren't going to hear what you have to say, and nobody's really going to, you're not going to gain a following from that, and therefore you're not going to get the votes that you need to get at the end of the day, because you're not going to go, you know, door to door in every house in Minnesota and have a conversation with every family. I mean, that's why we have the internet and these social networks, so you can kind of do that in a way. And so, I mean, do we need to start thinking about how this is going to affect elections? I think we got to start thinking about that. And how do you think it's going to affect elections? And you talked about it, big tech being a monopoly. What do we do? What do we do then going forward?
Well, Andy, it isn't a question about will it affect the election results. Absolutely it will. I mean, there's just no way. If you would give one candidate access to Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and TikTok, and not give any of those platforms to the other candidate, the election's over. I think it's absolutely obvious. Will it have an impact now? Absolutely. Has this had an effect on me? A chilling effect. Absolutely chilling. I know now that I have to be cautious if I'm going to use four words. If I use the word COVID, if I use the word vaccine, if I use the word mask, or if I use the word share, any one of those, they're the hot spots. Don't use them. I do not want to be seen as some problem child for these social media platforms. I want to be seen as someone who engages and communicates with people through social media platforms in a respectful manner, providing my opinion, my perspective, my analysis, oftentimes based on fact, oftentimes based on facts as I see it, oftentimes based on experiences I have with my patients in the hospital or the clinic, oftentimes based on my consumption of other news and media sources, whether it be legacy media sources or newly arrived internet sources. But the fact of the matter is, I want to be allowed and comfortable that I have access to these platforms. But am I cognizant right now in virtually everything I put on Facebook that TikTok kicked me off and I don't know why? You're damn right I am.
Yeah, I mean, that's a whole, I mean, we could talk about big tech for hours, but we're coming up on the end, and we'll probably talk about that again in another episode. But I think that was good, kind of breaking some of that stuff down, because it is a big deal, and right now it's a big deal in this campaign for you. You're kicked off TikTok. Hopefully, we can somehow reverse that, put some pressure on TikTok, try to have a conversation. I mean, if you're listening to this, share it with your family and friends, and try to get the word out there that this is happening. I mean, there needs to be a conversation about this.
Andy, thank you for saying that. I would, if TikTok administrators were sitting next to me right now, I would say to them, if I offended you, I apologize. If I spread misinformation, would you please share it with me so that I can correct it? How can I be the kind of respectful communicator on the TikTok platform that you originally created it for? Because that's who I want to be. I'm not interested in abusing TikTok, and I understand that they invested a lot of time and money to create this. But the idea of being permanently banned without ever having been warned and not knowing what I should avoid doing just seems unimaginable. I would love to have that conversation with TikTok.
Yeah, 1,000%. I think we gotta get that, have that happen at some point. So if you're listening to this, share it, get the word out. I mean, this needs to happen. The last segment, the last thing that we got to talk about every podcast, something positive, something good. We got to leave here smiling a little bit. So for the last segment, what's good, Scott?
Oh, there's so much that's good. I'll think of two things. One is, we launched 1 month ago yesterday. We have had thousands and thousands of people join the team by submitting their information and their emails. They want to hear from us. We've had 500 people say, we want to be out on the streets working, whether it's signs, door knocking, writing letters, whatever. We want to do it. We've had thousands of people donate, and we've crossed over $300,000 in revenue from various sources, and that's in 1 month. So we have a well-oiled machine working on our behalf, and we have literally people texting, writing letters, calling, sending emails, who have been so uplifting that I feel truly blessed. The only way this happens, our election, our campaign happens successfully in Minnesota, is for a groundswell of people to say, we want someone different. We don't want a professional politician. We want someone who's transparent, who's absolutely unafraid to tell the truth. We want someone who's respectful and doesn't categorize people with derogatory terms. I would never do that, I don't think, because I take care of everybody in my office, all sizes and shapes, all colors and creeds. And it's one of the things I'm most proud of, is I don't have a list of requirements that people must meet in order for me to be their doctor. My requirement is that you champion your own healthcare, and I'll be there to help. But if you plan on dumping your healthcare needs in my lap and washing your hands of the entire affair and want me to fix it, I would encourage you to find someone else. So, Dr. Scott Jensen, drscottjensen.com. That's where I'd want you to go. See my face. See my positions on the issues. Scroll down to the bottom of any one of the pages on my website, and you'll find 6 different links. You can click on the Facebook link, the YouTube link, any one of those. You don't have to be a member of Facebook, and it'll take you to my videos, and you can see them. I want you making an informed decision. I want you absolutely knowing who I am. If I end up being the candidate opposing Governor Walz in November of 2022, I want the Minnesota voters to know without question, I think I have a handle on who Scott Jensen is, and I think I have a handle on who Tim Walz is. For me, that's the way elections should be.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that, right, if you are, you know, suspicious of Scott or you have any questions, you can send him into the podcast. You can comment on his Facebook, and we're going to try to answer them on this podcast. We're going to try to answer them whenever we can, because I think it's so important for the politicians to have a conversation with the people, and that hasn't really been happening in the last couple elections, but I know Scott wants to change that.
One last thing that I'd like to say is good, Andy, also, is that people say, well, TikTok is for millennials. Come on. It's way bigger than that. You are always looking for a preponderance of who populates a certain platform, and Facebook might be populated by people more over 30 than under 30. That may well be. And TikTok might be populated more by people under 40 than over 40. But about 2-3 weeks ago, our clinic had the privilege of welcoming a new patient. And when asked, how did you come to be a patient at Catalyst, on the form she wrote, TikTok.
There you go. There you go. It's great. Yeah, that's awesome. Intergenerational. You got to have that happening. Not that anybody needs to know, but there's a big age difference between me and Scott. and so that needs to be said too. But anyways, that's we got to wrap this up. Thank you guys for listening. Make sure to share this. Make sure to like this. Subscribe. You know, share with your family and friends. Make sure to follow Scott on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, not TikTok anymore. Hopefully we'll get that back. But send emails into drscottjensen@gmail.com. We can answer those questions. And then is there anything else that I'm missing? Hit the website. I think that's it. Thank you guys for listening, and we'll see you guys in the next one. Goodbye.